Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I am trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Joss Ogonie, Will Bluewater, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. This is Blue Water, and this is Prophecy Keepers Radio, coming to you from Hoover County in the mysterious Missouri Ozarks in Mid-America. And our guest today is Thomas O. Mills. Thomas grew up on the Hopi Reservation. Really has an astounding story to tell. I guess originally he was from Holbrook, and his mom ran a restaurant there. And when the Hopi would come into town, she let them come in to eat. She was kind to them. So if I remember correctly, when they decided they wanted to build a cultural center, they asked his mom to get involved. And so he grew up for quite a bit of his young life being able to be taught directly by the elders. I don't want to mess the story any more, Tom, so let me go ahead and introduce you. Go ahead and say hi to the folks.
Hello, yeah, this is Tom Mills.
Well, Tom, I guess it's been, about a year and a half ago, you contacted me and sent me your book, which was probably one of the biggest wake-up calls I've ever had. It was certainly the most astounding bit of information that I've ever heard come out of Hopi. And so let's go ahead and just tell your story.
Well, really, my book is based on four books. The Book of the Hopi by White Bear Frederick, who was a friend of mine, who he was in cahoots with Frank Waters, who was probably way ahead of his time concerning Indians. And Frank Waters wrote some very good books. The Book of the Hopi is recommended reading for anyone who's interested in Indian cultures. He also wrote the Mexican Mystique, the Colorado. All these books are very good. But the Book of the Hopi, he studied with 30 Hopi elders for over 3 years. He lived in Pumpkin Seed Point and wrote this book and talked about their myth of creation or their story of creation. And it took him 3 years to put it together. And living up there in, back in 1963 is when he was there. There was no electricity. He lived in a regular hut, just like Indians, a rock hut, and suffered many hardships. One of the other books that I use as a reference is The Secrets of the Great Pyramid by Peter Tompkins. And his book really describes the pyramids and the complexes around the pyramids in Egypt, and not so much from a pharaoh's point of view, but from just a factual point.
Mm-hmm.
Another book I use is Path of the Pole by Charles Haptis. He was a professor who listened to his students, and one student asked him if there was the poles of the earth had ever been in different places, and he wanted to find out and study and took core samples and actually figured out where the poles have been in the past. And that's the real good. And the last book, the newest book I read, was Message of the Sphinx by Graham Hancock and Robert Duvall. And they used computer imagery to outline what the temples in front of the pyramids, why you have the right questions, why, and the reason behind some of the things over in Egypt and what the mural stands for. So really that's what my book is about. I combined my knowledge of the Hopis with those four books, and
I guess the thing that astounded me the most was that the pyramids on the Giza pyramid, Giza plateau, are they don't have a lot of the imagery on them that's so common in the temples and other places in Egypt. And what symbols there are on the pyramids of the Giza plateau correspond to the symbols that are most important in the Hopi religion. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
Well, I guess I was surprised in one way and not surprised in another, because one of my teachers was Ula Brinkerhoff. Ula was a mixed blood Cherokee who was secretary for the governor of Utah for a while, and she ran Hot Springs National Monument for a while down in northern Arizona. She lived down most of her life in that St. George, you know, southern Arizona area. Lived in Salt Lake for a while, but she was adopted by David Monongi, who was keeper of the Hopi Prophecy, and one of the four or five elders that edited the Pequot Ekati newsletter, which were 44 newsletters that outlined the Hopi plan of life. And I know from talking with her and with David and with Thomas Lanyake that they believe that there was a point that they migrated from, and that their white brothers migrated from, or those that left that point that later would come back and would be lighter skin. But Zula in her book, God's Chosen People of America, in the credit piece, if you open up the book and there'd be a picture of the of the Hopi homes at Olivi compared with the traditional homes in Jerusalem in the Middle East, and they were shockingly identical. And so the question has always been, where exactly was it that the Hopi believed their point of origin was?
Well, if you look at the Book of the Hopi and Frank Waters' interpretation of their creation myth, it's pretty clear. You have to just look at where we all began, not just the Hopis or the Whites mm-hmm. or the Reds or the Blacks. Where did the Creator start? And the Hopi myth, if you follow it, it leads you to that location. It starts off by saying that there was a Creator. We didn't come from monkeys. There was a Creator. He was looking for a place to create, and he found Earth. The only problem was it was out of balance. There was a problem. He had to solidify the lands, solidify the lands. He had to control the seas, and he did this by creating two twins, one to sit on each end of the Earth, the poles. We call them Isis and Nefertiti, and in the murals over in Egypt, there's two twins. One has a pyramid on its head, the other one has a bowl. Well, the myth goes on to say that he created his nephew. So that tells me the Creator wasn't alone. He had to have a sister, he had a nephew. He was looking for a place to create, and he found Earth. And he found that there was nine planets, all were gentle motion with each other. They had water and air. If you read the myth, you'll know the Hopis weren't mystified when they found out there was water on Mars, because their myth tells them there was water on Mars. Many things in the myth are real logical. Once you read it, you realize that they know a lot of things, and they're very honest people. So the Creator was looking for a place to create. He had to balance the planet before he could even put life on it. And once he did put life on it, the myth says that they couldn't speak. And I take this to believe that it means that they were like the apes or monkeys. If you put monkeys here first to see if they could survive, or something close to them. If you look at the murals of Egypt, you see that represented. There was always monkeys located in the murals. In the first world, the monkeys couldn't talk, but all the people lived with the animals, and everything was in harmony. There was still a problem, and the first world was destroyed by fire. The Creator came back. He left his nephew, Spider Woman, and a woman, a female, and they were left here on Earth to populate the planet. So, where did they leave him? Well, the myth states that he left his plan on Earth, what his plan was. The nephew had to leave that on Earth for us to see. And I believe this is the arrangement of the pyramids on the Gaza plateau. You have one for the nephew, one for the Creator, one for that represents this Earth. You have three for the Earth to come, and three of the Earths that are gone. Those are the satellite pyramids. And if you look at the position of those sets of pyramids, you can see that they're in a clockwise direction, or the direction the Earth goes around the Sun. So, I believe that the Hopis, their myth of creation, if you follow it all the way through to conclusion, it leads you back to the pyramid complex. So, am I making myself clear? Am I going too fast?
No, you're doing just fine. You're doing just fine. So I guess there's eight pyramids on the Giza Plateau, correct?
There's the nine.
Nine, okay.
Yeah.
And I guess the gist of what you were saying is that we have been through four worlds now, right? And we're going into the fifth.
The fourth time the Creator has tried to populate the Earth. That was his plan. He's trying to get us where we understand the problem. And so far we haven't followed his message. The Hopi still do their ceremonial cycles. They have nine ceremonial cycles. They do them every year. It's what they do. And they believe this so much. I mean, there's no very
I guess the shocker, and here it comes, folks. The shocker was, now everybody knows and, you know, has heard Native American people and indigenous people talk about balance. But what you're about to find out is that when they speak of balance, they really mean balance. It's not some, you know, what you're saying in your book is that the purpose for pyramids, and that they were purposely put in a certain place in order to balance this planet.
I believe that, because they're all on the 30th latitude. All of your large pyramids are on the 30th latitude. Now you find out that there's some in China. There's over 100 in China that were in this forbidden zone that nobody's ever even taken pictures of until recently. And there's pyramids in Mexico. But the only thing they have in common is they're on the 30th latitude. For some reason. Now, there's a reason people do things, and I believe that it has to do with balance. Many of the murals of Egypt show balance. They all have to do with balance.
Scale. Well, it makes sense, because everybody's been around a tire shop, and they'll notice that the tire tech will, first he'll, you know, he'll remove the old tire from the wheel, and he'll put the new tire on, and, Then, it used to be they actually used a level. They put the tire, in place wheel weights in certain places in order to get that bubble plumb. Nowadays they do it dynamically.
To do it correctly, they have to spin balance.
Have to spin balance it, and that's what they do nowadays. They didn't used to do that, This was. I was so astounded when I read your book, and then, in another way, so not surprised. But the difficult thing is, and the message of your book is that until we learn to literally balance our planet, every time the planet rolls, and it's done so several times now, it completely knocks us back to the dirt, and the race is on for us to develop our civilization again, develop our sciences and arts, and get to the point where we understand that the earth is out of balance, and then have time to do something about it.
And each time the creator comes back and rebuilds the pyramids, repaints the murals, rebuilds the statues. This is proven. If you read Tompkins' The Secrets of the Great Pyramids, all of your temples have been rebuilt over in Egypt 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
And they all line up with the solstice. They have to line up with the solstice each time, like Karnak and Luxor has 4 distinctive doorways where the solstice is measured. They can tell the dates, 365. Out to 4 decimals, where we're supposed to be, how long a day is supposed to be. Well, those doorways have been moved 4 times. So, my way of thinking, if you wanted to answer questions like what Stonehenge means, well, you would have to trace it back to like the first time and go back to the first days of Luxor. Mark the doorway out of Luxor that was the first doorway, tilt your that direction, and then put the sun on Stonehenge, and then you'll find out what Stonehenge really stands for. See, it was from the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to reposition the earth each time. I know this sounds way out, but if the doorway we're looking at right now measures the solstice, what did the other doorway measure? I mean, they measured the solstice back then.
Mm-hmm.
So
and of course, everybody knows you're certain on drift.
Yeah.
I've got a background in astronomy since I was about 12 years old. I've been an amateur astronomer. And stars drift and constellations change over a period of 50,000 years. Over the next 50,000 years, the Big Dipper, the star at the, which indicates the lip of the Dipper, not the handle, but the other one, it will travel further out and actually make the Dipper look more like a spoon. So, you know, over periods of thousands and hundreds of thousands of years, things change.
Yeah. every 72 years, the constellations move 1 degree. So if there's 360 degrees in a circle, it would take 25,920 years to go completely around a circle.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
OCO is Cherokee for hello. This is Chia Sagonige, also known as Will Bluewater. I'm the International Communications Director for the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. I'm speaking on behalf of the seven clans and beloved woman Sharon Rogers, wife of Chief Priest and Principal Chief Charles L. Yatlohi Rogers, M.D., oncologist. Their family discovered the tomb in Mexico of Sequoia, the world-famous inventor of the Cherokee alphabet and the namesake of the Cherokee National Forest in California. The state of Oklahoma was very nearly named the state of Sequoia. Nación Cherokee de México, the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, is known in the United States as the Cherokee Nation of Sequoia of Mexico, Texas, and the USA Reservation and Church. Free of any charge, we are accepting citizenship and adoption applications, not only from Cherokee descendants, but from all people of good heart, from all lineages, just as we did for the 10,000 plus years before the United States government fairly recently imposed restrictions on Cherokee citizenship. Tennessee Governor Sam Houston had not one drop of Cherokee blood, yet he left office and later became Kalanu, or Speaker of Council, second only to Chief John Jolly of the Cherokee Nation West. The Republic of Mexico has recognized the Cherokee 4 times since the 1700s, and Spain 5 times before that. We possess original physical copies of all those treaties. In January of 2001, the San Andres Accords, enabling government-to-government tripartite relationships between sovereign Indian nations and the government of Mexico, were passed by the Mexican Congress. A few weeks later, the first such sovereign Indian nation, Nación Cherokee de México, was federally recognized in a solemn ceremony in Torreón, the capital of the state of Coahuila, formerly known as the province of Coahuila in Texas. The ceremony was followed by a fabulous celebration, which was attended by Cherokee elders from all over the Americas, including citizens of the federally recognized Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, people like Squaw Yee, the famed bowmaker Al Heron. There is so much more to share with you, so I encourage you to visit our website at CherokeeDiscovery.com. While you are visiting the website, feel free to fill out a free citizenship application. Please be patient, though. We have no paid staff, and applications may take up to 9 months or more to get processed. If you're not a Cherokee, feel free to request adoption. And please don't forget, tell them Bluewater sent you. Ski. Wado.
And that's your grand succession.
Yes.
So about every 3,600 years or so, we seem to have a birth and the planet rolls over and we have problems, and we're back to square one or something like that.
Well,
right?
I think that's what's happened in the past. That's why that would explain many things when you think about it. That when you find pyramids out in the sea, that you find roads that wind up out in the sea, that nobody knows where the road came from or where it's going, but there's roads and loads of sea paths to the ocean.
Well, I know they found something under the ice down in Antarctica. And the word is that it's some kind of pavement. There's been a lot of comings and goings of scientists in the last 6 months of the year down there. So, and, you know, the Cherokee people, 1750, our people was called together by our chief and the old migration story was told. It was a ceremonial story that was told every once in a while. And he said that we came from across the Eastern Ocean and that we migrated here and that we went to Mexico and came back up here and then back to Mexico and then came back up here again. And anciently, I understand that the Hopi and the Cherokee were called the Twin Fires. And whenever there were grand council, if anyone from these two tribes spoke up, everyone would shut up and listen. But the Hopi, their position as far as in their memory, as far as the history of the world and their prophecies is so sweeping that the lamas in Tibet, who had a prophecy that someday they would come and visit the land of the red man, but they were absolutely astounded at what these people taught right from their hearts and from their heads, and they said, "Oh well, we have lots of prophecies too. We'll have to go home and dust them off." Well, you know, if you don't read them all the time and talk about them, you're going to lose them. I'm sure that the Tibetans do have voluminous prophecies that they have from.
Well, the Hopis believe that there's really four races: the red, the white, the black, and the yellow. And we have different guardians. I believe that the murals of Egypt show this also. But we were just taught different languages, customs, religions, and we have different guardians. So right now, in Mecca, they have the red man, where his guardian left. They have the big pilgrimage every year and go back to that site, but it's still the red man. Jewish people are just white people who have a different religion. When a black person is raised in England, he talks better English than I do. There's four races. There's not 100 different races. So,
Maori,
like that, then a lot of things fit. A lot of things come together. So,
one of the Maori elders told Sokosh, who was an elder that was interviewed a few weeks ago, told her that they originated in the Mediterranean, and which makes sense because the old name for the or one of the names for the Phoenicians was the Mauru or the Maori, and today Northern Africa and the place where the Phoenicians had their capital, which was actually an autonomous part of the Roman Empire almost 2,000 years ago, was called Mauritania. And now we have Mauritanian triracial artifacts that are showing up and have been showing up for, a couple hundred years in southern Illinois. So apparently the Phoenicians, who were known as red men, who stayed in their ships, came and went from here, and that would be the only way that they could account for all the cedar that was used, in construction of Solomon's temple, because there literally wasn't enough cedar in the Middle East to build the temple, and copper also, a tremendous amount of copper. So apparently, and somebody drew a Piri Reis's map, which showed, what the topography of Antarctica looked like 4,500 years ago, because the ice has been on it for about 4,000 years. And but the Cherokee people say that we came from an island off of the shores of Antarctica that sunk. Not Antarctica, excuse me, off of South America that sunk. And there's always been talk of Mu and Atlantis, and a lot of people go ha ha ha, and it's all a bunch of nonsense. But I'm sorry, folks. There's these are indigenous memories. Of lands, and you can see the Bimini Road. You can see it from an airplane. You can see what looks like a pavement, down in that in currently 80 feet of water, I guess, in the Atlantic near Bimini. But I don't want to get too far afield.
We believe that the first world was destroyed by fire, and the second was destroyed by ice. There was an ice age. And that's when the poles shifted. And then the third world was destroyed by water. There was another polar shift at that time. And each time the Creator chose a few people to keep for each race and held them inside the pyramids for protection. Lodge, and that's where they weathered out the storm with what the Hopis call the Ant People. And the third time, they traveled in boats made of reeds, and from an island, they followed their guardian, the Spider Woman, took them, and they lasted on these ships and floated across the ocean for long periods of time. They never thought they were going to see land again, and they wound up following the sun, with the sunrise going east. So they landed on the western backbone of the continent. Now they've just found the records of ruins down in Chile that are 12,500 years old, and they've changed their mind. People just didn't appear out in the middle of the New Mexico desert 11,000 years ago. This village was on the bank of the ocean on the western side of Chile. Well, that goes right along with what the Hopis have been saying forever, that they came across the ocean on boats made of reeds. In El Nino years, when it's hotter, the Pacific Ocean, the current runs eastwardly instead of westwardly. So it is possible. I think people have done that recently. They came across the ocean just to prove that they can do it and reach boats. But that's what the Hopi myth says. So
Thor Heyerdahl did that. They came two-thirds or three-quarters of the way around the world then.
Yeah, and their guardian took them north and told them where to settle. And if you look, there's a webpage, Jerry Davis' webpage called the Orion Zone, you'll see that the Hopis live on three mesas, first, second, third mesa. And those are lined up exactly, not possibly the same, but exactly the same as Orion's Belt. The ancient ruins of Benitaki, Walnut Canyon, form the rest of the constellation of Orion. So there was a reason that the Creator and His guardian wanted those Hopis to live where they live. And there's a reason nobody's ever moved the Hopis. They live there. Nobody's forced them off their land because land isn't worth anything. Nobody wants it. There's no running water. But they still survive. They live there where nobody else wants to live, and there was a reason that they live in that exact location, that they form the figure of Orion. It's real obvious, and Orion just isn't a constellation. Orion rises and lowers on the meridian path. The constellations move on the ecliptic path, and it takes Orion, half of 25,920 years to go up and then back down again. And if you look at the murals of Egypt, you'll see Orion spearing the bull and the destroyer there pulling the feet out from under the bull. Well, the bull is Taurus. Orion's coming up to meet the bull. When Orion's spear hits that bull, that's when the next rotation is coming. That's what the murals are all about. They show it over and over again. And it's not about pharaohs and treasures. The things we've been hearing about. If you look at the murals with an open mind, you'll see that there's a warning there for us, and that's what they're all about.
Now, you mentioned let me refer back to your book in my memory. In my memory, I see four couple. Two from each race, and of course they're addressed as Egyptian. But apparently, if you don't believe that you could survive inside a pyramid during a flood, next time you get in the bathtub, get a good sized glass, turn it upside down, and stick it down in the water and see just how much oxygen, or see how much air, remains in there. And I guess if you look at the galleries, some of the galleries, I guess, start down low in the pyramid, and you go in an upward direction, which would allow the a vacuum seal and allow people to stay in the upper part of the pyramid. And of course, there'd be a tremendous amount of room
poor food and so go ahead and tell us about those murals and the survival instructions and fish hooks and all that other kind of fascinating stuff that's in your book.
If you look at it with an open mind, you see that the murals are really, most of them are to teach you how to survive, like how to butcher your meat, how to fish, how to hunt, how to take care of yourself, prepare your food. They even made little statues to show you how to do these things, like bread mills. And they weren't trying to show you how they fed the builders of the pyramids. The pyramids weren't built by Egyptians. I don't believe that. If they were, why can't the Egyptians tell us how they did it?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be like when somebody built the Golden Gate Bridge? You know, my grandfather built the Golden Gate Bridge. He would tell me, you know, I did this. And I would tell my son, and what happened to the instructions? Who built, you know, who actually built the pyramids? Well, I believe the Creator built them. And I believe that there was a Creator. And I believe his nephew was here first. And if you left your nephew here to populate the planet, wouldn't you build him the nicest pyramid and the beautifulest temples and the most elaborate furnishings, gold things, and then when he died, you'd make sure he had a beautiful coffin, and it just happens to have four lids, and they're all solid gold. You take care of him. He did his job. He stayed here, and it probably cost him his life, but he populated Earth. That was his job in this third time. So, the murals, just like that.
Well, I guess, if you read your book, you might think, well, you know, what would these four couples, they lived a long, long time ago, and you know, what would they need survival instructions for? And you know, but nowadays, you know, people are pointing out that there were ancient civilizations here on Earth, and some of them were very, very high tech. Some of them may have even surpassed our technology, and so it's entirely possible that these were a fairly high-tech people who lived in cities that really needed to know how to butcher and how to fish. And, you know, it's the same kind of situation right now that I'm doing on the Internet with the e-books I've written, because it's all information, about, you know, what even if there were a disaster, or if we were invaded, or if Yellowstone exploded, and if there's some major catastrophe, you know, where would you get food? Where would you get water? So, you know, in one way, I'm really not surprised that those murals were there. So go ahead and tell us more.
Well, the statues, I think, represent the four, you know, couples of the four races. The Ammonia, the black, yellow, red, and white. The statues with their little children next to them. I believe those are our great, great, great grandfathers and mothers. And I believe that they probably, reason they left the murals was to teach the young children, because the Hopis, right now, they dress the little children up in Hopi costumes, keep them with their long hair, and because they know the Creator won't choose old people to be the chosen ones. He'll take young people to the pure Hopi, and that'll be the young ones, and they'll take them to the pyramid or wherever whatever device he has for this next rotation when it comes to save them. And that's what he's looking for. So when they came out, if you had those murals, you could look at them and figure out how to butcher, how to survive for yourself. I just don't believe that they're there for pharaohs. I'm way far away from that. And when I try to tell people in Egypt about my book or what the murals mean, I just get deaf ears. Nobody listens because they don't want anything. They just can't believe that there's another purpose.
Well, I know that
there is another purpose. So.
I know Robert Goswell's friend, Janion Brinkley, personally took some inscriptions that were found in the American Southwest Desert and showed them to Zahi Hawass, who is the minister in charge of the Giza Plateau. And he absolutely, you could not talk him out of that those were Egyptian inscriptions. And this is a man that knew, because he was in charge. And then we've got...
His logical answer to anything is that he's either covered by the fans or the grave diggers, the robbers, having opened it up and got there before him. Well, who were these grave robbers, and where is the stuff that they stole? Well, if you believe the Hopis, they were the geologists of the third world, or the second world. Those tombs have been there for a long time. Well, there was people digging them up after the second world or the third world. So, it's amazing to me that he can come on TV and dig down 400 feet and come to this thing and there's already a hole there, and he says the robbers got here first.
Right.
So how did they get there first, and where did the stuff go? Well, it went to a museum during the last world. That's where it went. I mean, there's a reason for these things. It didn't just, there was... It's so illogical sometimes. I just grit my teeth when I see some of it. It's so simple if you really think of it logically.
Well, I know... Jewish rabbis, they've been studying, and they know more about Genesis than Christians could possibly know. And their learned men will tell you that there are actually two creation accounts in Genesis, and it's very clear to them that there were civilizations here that were destroyed, and that another civilization was begun on top of that.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us. And you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
The Nephew's Pyramid, which would be the center period, on the, you know, the exact center of our land mass is. In front of it, we have a temple we call the mortuary temple, because they believe that's where they wrapped the pharaohs up for them to be buried in the pyramid. Of course, they've never found anybody buried in a pyramid or at that temple from above, you see the female figure, and she has a real thin waist, a big womb area, and there's a navel, a big pillar there where her navel should be. She has four feathers in her hair, and from her there's a shaft or causeway that runs exactly in line with the cost. The causeway is in line with the solstice, and it goes into a male figure that doesn't have any legs or any eyes, but he's got a head and an upper body. One arm, he's only got three fingers, and the other arm runs into this causeway, and that's a male figure, and I believe he represents death or the third world. He can only count to three. But if you follow the causeway into the female figure, she has a navel, and right in front of her is the sphinx. And in front of the sphinx is the sphinx nipple, which if you look at it from above, it's a newborn. It's a, like an egg. It's a got two eyes, two legs, two arms, and it also has a navel, a big pillar there that represents this navel. Well, if you were, Hopi said that they left the third world, and went into the fourth world underground, and rose up out of the navel. So if you connected the navel of Spider Woman, the female figure in front of the temple, in front of the pyramid, if you connected that underneath the Sphinx, go right to the navel of the newborn, which represents the court between the mother and the child, I believe that's where you find the Hall of Records. If there's a Hall of Records, if you need proof that there's, if there is a Hall of Records, that's where it would be. It'd be underground, it'd be underneath the Sphinx, and it'd be between those two tables. That'd be my thought.
Hmm. Well, tell us about the symbol, the hummingbird symbol, you know, this was the thing that really struck me, and I don't know if it'll interest the audience. The correspondence between the symbols on the pyramids of the Giza Plateau and the religious symbol of the Hopi, you know, I guess the major symbol for a hummingbird.
The symbols on the plateau, you say?
Mm-hmm.
You're talking over in
Giza.
Yes. Well, most of those are clan symbols, state symbols. But again, here you have lines that mark the if you follow it, they go to different stars, and it could all be used for balancing the planet. But the main thing I think they used for balancing the planet was when the pyramid was halfway built. If you read Secrets of the Great Pyramid by Thompson, when the pyramid was halfway built, the Grand Gallery could have been used as a platform. There's four notches, 12 of them, and you could drop down through the Grand Gallery when it was halfway completed, and you could map out the constellations as they went by.
Hmm.
That's exactly the way we do it nowadays. But it would give you the transit of the stars, and that was where they could take the constellations. Well, they did that for a reason, and they carved them into the ceiling of Denver, which was blown out of the ceiling there and taken to Paris by Napoleon. But the reason he wanted the constellations was to line up Orion and when we would be in this position where we're about to do our flip again. That was the message, that the constellations are going by us at 1 degree every 72 years, and Orion's going back and forth, up and down. When his spear comes up and hits the bowl, that's when we're going to have the next shift. And we're very close to that position right now. And I don't know how to explain it, but that's what my research has taught me. So,
well, I guess there's two stories about where Tupapu, or the place of emergence for the Hopi Pueblo people is. I mean, one of them is in what's now the San Luis Valley, and the other was somewhere in the Grand Canyon. And
I understand back about 1906 or so that there was a river expedition in the Grand Canyon, and someone noticed a cave several hundred feet above the river, and they could tell that from that dark desert varnish that gets on the red rock. And when they caught their attention, they climbed up and they found a cave opening, and I guess it was a very long shaft that went in several hundred feet that opened up into a gallery that could have held, upwards of 10,000 people, but that there were, at that time they called them Oriental because they didn't understand Egyptology like they do today. But apparently there was, the government denies it today, but I understand the Smithsonian was sent in. They took all the artifacts out, took them to San Diego, put them in a boat, took them out in the middle of took them a few miles offshore and scuttled the boat and then blew up the cave. And here you have this this other connection between Egypt and Egyptian type artifacts and just the fossil story.
Well, I'm not sure if it happened. I know if it's there, I know how you would find it. You would just have your Orion out over the Hopi village, have his belt up and his spear or his shield, and you'll see his shield goes out over the Grand Canyon. All you have to do is plot where those stars hit on the ground of his shield, and you'd find that village or you'd find that cave. All of the other stars represent an ancient village. So it wouldn't be hard to find if it's there.
And I know Spain, you've got there are Egyptian panels in Australia that are unexplained, and there is a possibility that well, I guess the thinking is now that Egypt, actually may have originated somewhere else and moved to what is now North Africa. But because you have Egyptian-type artifacts popping up all over the world, and right now the academics are kind of puzzled about what's going on, but I know it sure got my attention.
Yeah. Well, it's really pretty simple. They had different guardians. Took them to different locations. The black man went to Africa, the white man went to Europe, the yellow man went to China, and there was different, maybe we're only talking four or five people, three or four people went in a certain location, but their guardian took them there and gave them instructions on what to do, and that's how different religions were started.
And that story is so close to the flood story with Ham, Shem, and Japheth. It boggles. Absolutely boggles the mind. Now, who do you think the ant people were?
Well, I think they were the creator's laborers. The Hopi Sablagas, we call them, that do all the singing and dancing, and they do all the labor. And I believe that that's the representation of the ant people, that they were the laborers. They were the ones that built the pyramids. They were the ones that have very small bodies and have a lot of strength. They're very smart and have big eyes. And, you just have to listen to the way the Hopis think, and they use things they understand to explain things they don't. So,
they
were the creator's laborers.
You know, everybody's seen the paranormal TV shows, and I guess everybody's seen what a representation is of a gray, but if the grays don't fit the description of the ant people, I don't know who would.
Well, that's a good point, and I think they just had some sightings down in Mexico today. Nobody could explain some Mexican pilots down there took photos of some objects that couldn't explain, but if the creator was worried about us, he might send the laborers back down here to take samples once in a while, and find out how our water system is, what we're drinking, how we're living. It's not impossible. I know he's going to come back. He left his plans.
Well, I know one show that was on the Discovery Channel just this last week. It's called Touched by an Alien. And a lot of the abductees that are being picked up, especially in the last few years, are being shown scenes of Earth changes. They're being told that there's going to be tremendous earthquakes and tsunamis. And they're also being told that very soon that we will not be viable anymore, which means we won't be able to reproduce. And, of course, this is something that the Hopis predicted, that eventually our males will stop being male. And there's yet another thing that the Hopis knew about, and another connection between people that are experiencing abductions, and they're being told by people that fit the description of the Ant People, the same thing that the Ant People protected the Hopi from in previous worlds.
Which, it seems logical to me that I try to prove everything I've written, and I try to find a reason. If you just look for reasons why things are there, all of a sudden it becomes quite obvious what's happened, what happens.
Well, I know the traditional Hopi haircut is, I guess it kind of looks like they put a big bowl on the head and cut it around, and then they kind of cut a window pane, around their eyes and face. And I've seen some representations of hairstyles in ancient Egypt, and, it's very similar.
Well, when I was walking out there, there was hundreds of kachinas all around me. I mean, there was, it was just like going into another world. And, I finally found a place, got down in there, and myself was there. I got the men have to sit on one side of the team, and the women kids on the other. And I stayed there till 4 o'clock in the morning watching, you know, 9 sets of kachinas come down and dance for us. And it lasted all night. It was, you know, very moving experience for me. So, needless to say, I wanted to know more, and I kept going back and started going to Shimokovi and Shangovi and Shapalovi and Hotsela. And I was welcomed. You know, if you show respect, the dances are for you. They're for everybody. And, it's a funny feeling when a kachina gives you an apple or an orange or sprinkles you with cornmeal and you just feel like you're part of another world. So that's how it started. And then I started asking questions to the elders that I knew and trying to figure out what they were talking about. What's this four worlds? You know, what are you talking about, four worlds? This is the world, you know, this is, what do you mean, four worlds?
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Oklahoma Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
And then I start talking about corn. You know, corn is such one of the mainstays of the Hopis, and we take it for granted. Try to change its structure now and do things to it that we should never be doing. The Creator created these things. There's a balance there also. You know, if the bugs can't eat the corn, then there's no birds to eat the bugs. Pretty soon we wiped ourselves out. Everything was perfect, and we don't need to be changing things like that. And that's the whole piece of fear that something terrible. Their myth is that the Creator created corn and gave it to them, and he gave us 4 ears, and he let each race pick an ear. Well, the Hopis waited their turn. They were the most humble. They waited to the very end, so they got the shortest little stocky piece of corn. But they called it Corn Mother. It lasts a long time. It's got more nutrition in it. They can grow it without much water, and that's their staple of life. And corn doesn't grow in the wild, so where did it come from? You know, fish eat it, birds eat it, cows eat it, people eat it. But where does it come from? Well, you know, they say, well, they find it in ruins. Well, yeah, but where did it come from? Well, I hope you said the Creator gave it to them, and that's where it came from. So that's what I believe. When they tell me things, I believe them. And when you look into it, if you research corn, you go back and you'll find out that that's the truth, that it doesn't grow in the wild. So where did it come from? You know, when you live with the Hopis and talk to them, all of a sudden, you just get answers instead of questions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got to know them, anyway.
Well, I know the corn, I believe in either Peru or Chile, is, I understand that the corn all around the world, I believe, is 13 chromosome corn, except for the corn that grows in Peru or Chile, and the corn that grows out in the Pacific Ocean, which is kind of interesting because it may show a migration route. But so who were I guess Chief Mike and I know Thomas, you know, was certainly alive up until the early 90s, Thomas Konyaka, and was John Lanson still alive in the early 70s?
Yes.
Okay, so John Lanson, so you probably met him, you probably met Chief Mike of Variety, and how do you believe the Hopi are going to finish their migration? People would begin to cut and shave all their hairs come true because I guess a lot of the Hopi and Navajo youth feel more accepted by the Hispanic youth, and the Hispanic youth, a lot of them in and out of gangs are just about shaving their heads. So now you've got Navajo and Hopi kids that are shaving their heads, so they fit in more with the Hispanic kids that live around them.
Very good book. proves that, you know, there's any people who aren't related to the Hopis, but they're red man, but they came from Japan. So it's all together, you know, just where their guardians put them and where they went in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of confusing, but it's not confusing if you look at it that way.
Well, I know the Ainu people are completely different people, but they live in Hokkaido, and they're indigenous people, and they're completely different people from the 99% of the Japanese people that inhabit the islands today.
Sure.
And,
so they had a different guardian. They had a different religion in the beginning.
Yeah, there's definitely, definitely connections between Asia and the Northwest tribes. And, but the Hopi have had an absolutely incredible migration clear around the world. And, I know the Cherokees have, you know, people kind of laugh at my people, but we've been, there have been busts and statues that have been discovered, down in Maya country that very clearly show, people that are not of Mayan origin, because they have, rather than the Mayan aquiline nose, they have kind of a ski-jump nose, an inverted nose, and, you know, that's one of the, Wild Potato Clan, a lot of those folks have that kind of an inverted, you know, speech up nose. And
so the most important thing is that we didn't evolve from monkeys. I think that's very important, and I believe it's not true. You know, wouldn't there be stages of monkeys in between humans and monkeys running around right now, if that was the case? I mean, where are they? How did that happen? Is that the fallacy?
There's just too much. I we're beginning to and have for quite some time, you know, in vitro, testicle test tube babies, and you can know for sure that the creator knows how to do that.
Sure.
And the Urantia book, which is an interesting read. This talks about the original root race, and it actually says that, came along with the four colors that we know now, that there were other colors that died out, like the orange and the green. But that book states that the way Creator did it was that, you know, for a million years, you know, monkeys were born to monkeys. Until one day, two human children were born to an ape mother. And, Jerry, that would make you kind of think. You know, it didn't come right out and say, well, the Catholic people have their Immaculate Conception. They say that both Jesus and Mary were both not the product of a sexual union. Well, you know, what's the alternative? You know, the alternative.
Well, they're called artificial insemination, but we can do that nowadays. That's not to say that the Creator didn't have to send his son down later.
That's
when the world got so corrupt, when the Romans were killing everybody, and, this is before that. I believe that the pyramids and the murals and the temples were here before Jesus. You know, I think they were there a long time before that.
Oh, yeah. The authorities in Israel were trying to kill all the boys of a certain age. I guess there was a couple different attempts at that to try to kill this, because they knew generally the period of time that the Messiah would have been born. And,
that would be a good time for him to come.
Well, they fled into Egypt.
You know, if you're going to wipe out the whole, all the male boys, then the Creator might have a conception of that, you know.
Yeah, I understand. Now, Joseph of Arimathea was a very wealthy man, and he was uncle to Jesus. And it wasn't that the Bible talks about Jesus, not having any place to lay his head. But actually, they were craftsmen. His uncle was the noblest imperio, which meant he was a Roman citizen. He was in charge of all trade routes. And he either traveled with Jesus
or if Jesus fulfilled every jot and tittle of the law, he had to be married, he had to have children. So the people in Wales talk about Joseph of Arimathea coming on their high speed ships out of the pillars of Hercules and coming up to southern England to where they mined tin for 1,000 years before the birth of Christ. But Arimathea was a very wealthy man, and you can see how convenient it would be. And if you were a Roman citizen, no one would lend a hand on you. So it would have been very, very simple for Jesus and his apostles to literally travel the world in total safety and relative comfort and in a very organized manner, an efficient manner, if they had those relations. But the place for temple building and the skills were learned in Egypt. And there is talk that that after he was 12 or 13 years old, that Jesus learned a lot of things in Egypt. He may have learned healing arts, and certainly would have learned more about, you know, his father's trade.
Well, if the Hopi sense is correct, and this is the fourth world, then the pyramids would have been built at different times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think history bears that out. The first dynasty, second dynasty, third dynasty, whatever you want to call them, but the pyramids are of different ages and different time periods. So, to me, that proves the Hopi myth.
Well, I'll tell you, you've connected some dots that nobody's ever connected. And I know, one of the first things I asked you was, how come you haven't been on Art Bell, you know? And I guess they felt that it would be a little bit too hard to explain, you know, how all this worked. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's nothing more difficult to understand the one Richard Hoagland talks about every night. And
well, I don't know about Art Bell. I've never listened to him, but I could explain this a lot better if I could show you the murals and show you the nephew. He's right there in the bowl, and Taurus, and Orion, and it's all right there. It's all it's repeated over and over again. And,
absolutely.
In the end, when I pick up a book with Egypt's murals now, I can see where the creators get frustrated. He's tried to make it so plain for us, and we've gone off on this fairyland thing about pharaohs, and it's a shame that nobody's listening. So, we've all been so specialized, you know, there's people that are astronomers, you know, they only have one view, and then there's the Egypt people that they only have one view, and nobody's taking the whole beach. Nobody's looking at the big picture. I mean, nobody's looking at it as a whole picture. Instead, everybody's just taking little pieces of it, trying to diagnose their own special thing. And it's not working. It's not working. They can learn more just when I'm sitting with a Hopi elder in 20 minutes than I can tell you in an hour. So.
So how close do you think we are for that spirit to come up and hit that bowl?
I can just barely hear you.
How close do you think we are to Orion's sphere coming up and hitting that bowl?
Well, it's when the constellations shift, and that's going to be in the year 2012, between the year 2010 and 2012. That's the same thing as the Mayan calendar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Mayans say, you know, that there's nothing written in stone about that 2012 date. The guest next week, Don Jaime Perez, has done translation work for some of the Mayan elders and has attended some very important meetings during the Cinco de Mayo week in Mexico City. And he'll be on the Saturday after you are. And but they, you know, they say that there's another prophecy that's of a date preceding, 2012, and that there's a little bit of flop in there, and actually it could happen just about any time.
Well, I know it didn't happen the constellations didn't shift in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the day that Sagittarius went to Pisces, or it didn't happen.
Well, the Tibetan Kalachara and the Hindu ancient calendar and what the Hopis talk about and the Mayans, they're all pointing to this period after 2000, anywhere between 10 to 30 years after it. Something is definitely up. Now we've got, are you aware of all the major climate changes that are going on because the Gulf Stream is shutting down in the Atlantic Ocean?
Well, the poles are melting. That's one thing the myth tells us to watch is the poles. And the North Pole's going to be completely gone in another 20 years.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide. And then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Well, somebody called in.
The ice up there.
That's right.
The South Pole's melting in, so.
See, people that are overflying the North Pole are being told to shut their windows, and one guy peeked out and he noticed that where there should be ice is a lot of water. So
well, if he lived in Florida, it's only a foot above sea level. New Orleans is under the sea level,
mm-hmm.
Right? And here we can have the oceans are going to be rising, so it's a dangerous thing.
Oh, it is. I know Clifford Alford's friends rappelled down into the Ross ice shelf down in Antarctica, and this is a piece of ice, 1,500 feet thick, and probably about the size of one of our United States. And they said that the reason why they went down inside the glacier was because of the change in the weather. There's been a lot of rain down there, and they said that there is a warm water bubble in the middle of that glacier. Well, if that glacier let go and cracks and goes in the ocean down there, well, it's going to cause huge tsunamis. And I understand that if it did completely melt, that it would raise the water level of the oceans all over the world over 100 feet.
Yes.
So we're talking about some major changes here, and so
How would that affect the balance? See, that's the question you have to ask.
Exactly.
How would that affect the balance of the Earth?
Well, it would redistribute all that waste traveling around the globe rather than at the poles, so something would have to give.
And I'm not, an expert on any of this or anything, but I know what the murals tell me, and I've talked to some people, and they say that there's an equatorial bubble on the Earth that acts as a gyro that keeps us in balance, and it would take a huge impact of something to shift that, to shift it. But I know when I sit on top, when it slows down, it topples over and, it rotates. So,
that's right.
It doesn't matter how big the bulge is in the middle, if the speed slows down, if the Earth heats up, hot things expand and slow down, cool things contract and speed up. So, maybe I'm wrong, but I know I've got the murals and the Hopi behind me in what I'm saying, so.
I guess the Hopi have commented that they've actually seen, three or four times that the Earth has, risen in the east and set in the west, and then there was a day of darkness, or,
several days. It was two times. The first time with fire, it didn't rotate, but the second time with the ice, it did, and the third time with the water, it did, so.
So they know about at least two pole shifts.
Yes.
And,
their elders taught them about it. They passed it down from generation to generation. I mean, it's not a new thing to them. I mean, it's not a, they talk about it like it just happened. So
if the rotation of the Earth slowed down, it would slow down very, very slowly until it completely stopped. And then, for a period of maybe several days, it would be, completely stopped. And so you'd have, 3 days of day on one side and 3 days of dark on the other side. And then it would begin to rotate in the opposite direction.
And then what might we do? We might rush to build a pyramid up. That might be what the people in the third world did. And that's why the latest pyramids are so disarranged and not completed. And the joints didn't match up. And, Egyptologists tell you, well, for some reason, these newer pyramids, they forgot how to build pyramids. And they can't figure out why. Well, if they rush to build them, and it's too late, what's going to happen? They're not going to be effective. So, you have the reason that the pyramid, the Nephi's pyramid, gives you the pi. And when you look at the size of that pyramid, mathematically you come up with pi.
The pi ratio.
And pi is how you square a circle.
Right.
So they were trying to give us a clue on how to place the next pyramid. The pyramid itself is trying to tell us, this is how big the Earth is. This is the distance to the sun. If you look at the murals of Egypt, you'll see that the sun's rays are always coming down, and there's a hand on the end. So the sun rays are giving us a hand where we're supposed to line up. There's a life symbol at the bottom of the sun. Well, that tells me when we do our alignment, we don't aim it at the middle of the sun, we aim at the bottom, because that's where life is.
Mm-hmm.
We take our measurements from the sun's rays, line it up in the middle, and that's where we get our correct, accurate measurements of where we're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it's about. If you look at the murals with an open mind, all this starts to just add up. They weren't praising the sun. The sun was giving them a helping hand.
Mm-hmm.
The sun's rays were the hand at the end of the rays, not the other direction. So.
Well, I know that the sunspots have been causing a major problem. And earlier this year, there was a solar storm that knocked out several satellites, and it kind of brushed Earth. It wasn't very serious, but this kind of thing could happen again. And there's a distinct possibility that there's more to weather than just rain and hail. There's also the solar winds and electromagnetic storms and all these things. They're worried about the magnetic field of Earth, and if if something were to happen and that went down, that would completely disrupt electrical systems. Certainly, the internet. And if the internet went down, there would go the banking systems. Would literally wreck the economy of the world in a 24-hour period, and everybody would.
They say it's happened three or four times. time that they can judge back 200,000 years ago. They just figured 200,000 years apart is what they're. And if you read past the pole, you'll find out that that's where he got his measurements, was from the magnetic fields and lava flows.
Mm.
And he just went back 100,000 years, and you can plot exactly, between 75,000, there was one, 50,000,
mm-hmm.
or 25,000 years apart, and 25,000, there was an ice age, and then the third one came early, but the Hopi said that happened about 12,500 when there was the flood, and now we're in our present climate. So it's a predictable pattern, and right there in the path of the pole is by Charles Haskins.
And ice cores, and lake bottom cores. Lake bottom cores is what they use to prove, what ruined the Mayan civilization, and it was a drought. And ice cores have shown, I guess it was about 35,000 years ago, a tremendous explosion similar to what happened in Yellowstone, probably even further back. Caused a situation on the planet where there was only about 10,000 people left on the planet, because they knew from the DNA record that something happened during this period of time, and then later on, when the DNA scientists got together with the climatologists, they figured, oh, that's why.
It's the present location. It's out there 12,500 years ago.
Huh.
So a huge amount of water over Niagara Falls, and that's why it's there. The Grand Canyon, if we're to believe that it actually lifted up in this little Colorado River, carved this big canyon, wouldn't there be a big delta out in the ocean where all the dirt went?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no delta. So where did all the dirt go? I mean, there was a massive amount of water flowed through there. The Colorado River is the remains of that. Colorado, the land didn't rise up in this little river cut the Grand Canyon. They come up with these things, and they're searching for the truth, but they're not listening. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to try to put it all together. And, but anyway, if anybody liked my book, I've got a few left, and they can email me. My email address is emails1870. AOL.com, and I'll send you one for free. I've got about 100 left, and that's about the best I can do. I'm trying to get the word out.
I don't know. I've got a link. I've had a link in a copy of your book, the cover on the website since February. I've been trying to get you on, and it took this long because I lined up some people and promised them dates before you, and. But, I guess there's no accidents, and, and maybe publish an electronic version of your book, and make it, something I can talk about, to make it a lot easier to, but, Thomas, I really appreciate you coming on.
I hope I didn't make it too confusing, and it's hard over the phone, and, but I did the best I could,
No, I think you did a good job. I think you did an excellent job, and this is something that people need to know about, and that's one of the reasons why we're here. Well, folks, this has been another episode of the Haunted Villain Story of Prophecy Keepers, and Thomas, thank you very much.
You're welcome. You have a good night. Happy day.
And bye, folks.
Bye-bye.
Let the truth be known.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
Kind again, let the wind.